Thank you. Thank you. it.
I'll start again, Mike. Mike O'Connor, chair of the group. Randall Bourne, Rod Rasmussen, Phil Lodico is not on, Mike Rodenbach, Dan Bladell, Greg Aaron, Kristen Curtis, Matt Larson, Cal Serra, Mark Circle, Paul Diaz, Eric Brunner Williams, Margie Millen, Adam Palmer, and excuses from Jeanette Lubel and Rodney Joffe, who are not able to be on the call today. Dave Piscatello, Ehab Shrem, Steve Crocker, Wendy Salter, and for staff we have Liz Gaster and our new staff member, Marika.
Excuse me, Mr. Ehab Shrem, now join.
Welcome aboard. Does that conclude the roll call then? Hopefully you can all see essentially our agenda in front of you. Again, if you're not on the Adobe Connect call, feel free to join. And I think we should probably get in the habit of muting our lines. Again, some people have a fair amount of background noise. What I thought we would do today is a little more process than subsequent calls, but because we're getting started, I sort of thought it would be good for us to get a little bit grounded in how things will work. And then my goal is to get us into a brainstorming session and get to the real work by about 40 minutes from now and spend an hour or so actually starting to brainstorm some of the answers to the questions. But what I wanted to do first was just spend a few minutes familiarizing folks with this Adobe Workspace. And to that end, I'm going to change it right before your very eyes. And I'm going to stop sharing my screen, and I'm going to move us into a different set of panels. What you should be seeing now is five or six panels on the screen instead of the one big slideshow. And the thought is that we've got sort of two ways to communicate amongst ourselves. We've got the phone call, but because we've got so many people on the call, it's going to be hard without some sort of roll call mechanism. So if you look over on this side of the screen, hopefully you can see my cursor. One of the things that you each have as an option is the ability to change your status. So let's say that I wanted to raise my hand. I think I can raise my hand by highlighting my name and going down to the bottom and clicking the little button that says raise hand. And Wendy is smiling. So that's what I want you all to do. I want you all to do something like that. Just like Wendy did. That was excellent. And Rod's giving a little applause, and Paul's in there, and Margie's in there. Cool. This is great. So everybody try that a little bit, just because, you know, I want us all to kind of get comfortable with this gizmo. As we're going through the call, I'll be able to see those, even though I'm going to be sharing my screen again in a minute. And if you want to get in the queue, go ahead and raise your hand. If you want to have me speed up or slow down, feel free to use all those buttons and so on and so forth. And we'll sort of use this to manage the conversational queue. My goal is to make sure that everybody who wants to speak about anything gets a chance to do that. And so feel free to slap me around if I ignore you, but I'll keep a close eye on that. Now, over on the other side of the screen is a little poll in which right now the question is, do we agree on this? And I'm going to change this, and I'm going to say, do we like anchovy pizza? And I'm going to open the poll, and I am going to vote yes, because I love anchovy pizza, and I encourage all of you to chime in. I have a statistical norm that I'm trying to prove or disprove here, and it's actually being disproven. My thought is that anchovy lovers only constitute about 5% of the population of the world. And we either have a skewed group of anchovy lovers, or we have I have a statistic that's inaccurate, because we have a fairly large proportion of anchovy lovers in the group. This I'm thinking that I may use when we want to test the degree of consensus around the topic. My hope is that we can stay pretty much around consensus viewpoint, and we'll just see how that goes as the conversation continues. But during consensus, it's also very helpful to sort of get an interim view of what the opinions are. And if, for example, we were working on something for real, what we would do next is say, okay, we have pretty substantial lack of consensus. What can we do to modify this proposal so that we get 100% consensus? And so I'm going to do that. I'm going to say, what if we buy anchovy and other kinds of pizza? Are we okay with that? And I'll open the poll again. Vote yes to the proposal. And one person is saying no. And we have a milk.
Yeah, it's your cheese hater. You haven't gotten to the cheese problem yet, and I know you're in Wisconsin.
Problem. And see, this is hard for a Wisconsin person to handle.
I know it is, and I thought I should break it to you right now because I'm your staff support. So there you go.
Okay, so we're edging towards consensus, but we haven't quite made it. And this is the sort of thing that I'm hoping we can use when we get down to the substantive stuff. I'm not planning to use the notes section. I'm not going to watch the chat because my brain just can't handle that much input at once, but I am right now. The poll does support and also supports not only multiple single checks, but also a checkbox kind of thing where we can sort of vote from.
So, Mike, are you seeing the chat?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
And I'm not sure the hum. I'm not understanding the hum. Humming for consensus.
So none of the rest of us can see the poll results.
Oh. What happens if I close the poll? Now can you see it?
No.
Oh, well, that's annoying. So what do people see on their screen at this point?
We just see our own votes. We don't see the conclusions, the total results of the poll.
Ah, here's a button to click. Hold on. Now what?
Ah, yes.
Broadcast results.
Much better.
That's the missing link.
Are you able to choose a different option which shows the results of each person's vote?
No, I'm not. I think this is, let me just drive over there and look. But I believe, no. What I can do is what you see with me having checked that box. So if we want to see the results of each person's vote, one way we could do that is back over in the attendee list. What we could do, let's try this. Let's change our status to agree or disagree. And so I'm going to change my status to agree. and a little check mark appears over there. Cal is agreeing, Steve is agreeing, Liz is disagreeing. And so on the pizza discussion, now we would know who the people who disagreed with the pizza discussion were, and that would probably be pretty helpful as we're trying to elicit the clarifying issues, like the fact that some people hate cheese, and that's probably a useful refinement to use when we want to know who's voting. We use the attendee list capability rather than the voting thing. I'm going to clear my agree off. Wendy's raised her hand, so I'm going to approve that. I don't know what that does. Oh, that gives you a microphone, but that presumes there's audio on this call. So, Wendy, just go ahead.
I was just trying to clear my status. Didn't mean to do that.
Okay, well, I'll see what happens if I... Yeah, I can click it and make it go away. Let's see what happens if I... Oh, why, my status is still with raised hand. I'm going to clear my status, too. There, okay. Anyway, that's the little tour of the workspace that I wanted to take us through. And for the most part... Go ahead.
Mike Lindbach. It's the Brown Process. And it's asked to clarify. I mean, obviously, some people aren't on the call, and some people like me today aren't able to access the Adobe. So, presumably, everything that we decide on calls will then be confirmed on email, and everyone will have a chance to object or comment at that point, right?
Oh, sure. And especially in these early calls, what will happen? That I'll take notes as we're speaking. And then those notes will go up on the wiki just as a starting point for editing commentary. And if I'm going to actually use this as a springboard to sort of leap out of the Adobe lesson and go back into sharing my screen, because what I want to do now is take us through sort of the work plan, and that's a pretty good segue into that. So at this point, in a second, your screen should have reverted back, and you should be able to see our little agenda at this point. Is that what everybody sees? Mike, are you still on the unmuted? Because you're getting—I think you're the one that's generating a fair amount of background noise at this point.
Yeah, I'll just sit on mute. Thanks.
No problem. Okay, so let me take us through the work plan just a little bit to give folks a chance to comment about this. This is a little picture that I drew. Basically, where we are right now is in this, we have to approve this template, which we'll do in a second. But then, can people see my cursor as I move it around the screen? If not, maybe I can do something about that. Yeah. I'll just have to be very clear. What I'm thinking is that we will essentially go out for constituency statements twice. The first time, very informal, much like these calls and much like a lot of the editing, just to essentially brainstorm ideas, develop ideas, broaden our menu of possible solutions, and then prepare an initial report based on both the informal constituency statements and the results of these calls, and take that document out to a more formal round of constituency statements and public comments, factor those in to a final working group revision that be where we get to really refine our results and decide whether we have consensus or not. And if we do, that's great. And if we don't, we'll publish reports with multiple opinions and send that on to the GNSO Council. In order to do that, I've put together a little work plan for us. And if you look at the dates, it's a little bit longer than our 90-day charter, and I'm getting the sense from Aubrey and Chuck that this will not be a problem. But before I go to them with these formal dates, I just want to check with you all and make sure that this feels realistic to you. Under each one of the milestone events is a little list of tasks. I'll just click on the first one because this is the one we're working on right now. What I did is I laid out, to get to a given milestone, the stuff that needs to happen. And in this one, this is a little bit weird because much of the stuff that led up to this milestone had happened before I became the chair. But if you look down at the bottom of this list, we're kind of at the end of the process of developing detailed work plans, establishing email lists, share workspaces, and teleconferences, and getting the statements of interest from members of the work group. For those of you who haven't submitted a statement of interest yet, please do. We need them from everybody unless you already have one on file because of some other ICANN-related duty that you have. If you're running into trouble with that, let me know and I'll help out. Anyway, that's sort of the forming the working group task. That's nearly done. We're going to finish that up today. We're also going to finish up the templates, I hope, because it would be nice to get that template out to the constituencies soon, like tomorrow, so that they could spend a couple of weeks filling them in. And so that's sort of the way this work plan is laid out. This first round of constituency statements is pretty short. It's really basically from tomorrow until the 25th, which is really only a couple of weeks. And my thought here is that this is an informal round, essentially an option-expanding round rather than a decision-making round. The second round is the full 30-day cycle that gives people time to go ahead and go through a more formal process with their constituencies. But this one's pretty short. The hope would be that you people who are representing constituencies would get your comments from your constituency back in late July and have about a week to prepare or refine that statement and get it on to the wiki. I also gave you a chance to go back to your constituency in early August and get their approval. And then once those are in, and once our... meanwhile, we'll keep plugging along in parallel with that, doing these conference calls. My thought was that we would spend essentially this call and the next two calls trying to brainstorm our way through the list of 8 or 9 questions that we've been asked to answer. And then we'll fold in the constituency statements in sort of the early part of August and see if we can identify, especially during that editing cycle, see if we can find the areas of non-consensus and then spend the call on August 8th either arriving at consensus or concluding that there needs to be several positions published. And then primarily Liz and I will buckle down pretty hard and that last 4 days and share an initial report. Somebody's moving a microphone around or moving their phone around without being on mute. It's pretty loud. From there, I think the initial report complete. Yeah, after the draft is done, after Liz and I have finished the draft, then we get to go through that draft again on a teleconference and give it its final scrub before we release it for comment in the public comment period. So that's sort of the first half of our work. That takes us sort of from here, where we are today, through these two parallel processes. Then we as a group prepare an initial report. And I think that's all I'll go through for right now. I think process stuff. And I sort of want to stop at this point and go out to the group and just see if there are issues, concerns. This is pretty much my work on my own. I have no editorial pride whatsoever. So if there's something that we need to modify in this, or if this is unreasonable, this would be a good time to let me know and we'll fix it. People okay with this as an approach? One of the habits that I will show you is that I'll let those little pauses go for a while. Again, to encourage people to speak, but if I don't hear anything, then I'll take that as an agreement and we'll carry on from there. So I'm going to take that as a, yeah, this is okay, let's keep going, vote on the work plan. And I think that's going to get us done with the process part, with the exception of this template. And I just want to take you all through it real quick. And you're welcome to follow along if you want. But this is the template that's out there for you that you can use to go back to your constituencies on this first round. And so what I tried to capture in this is basically this, there are two chunks. This chunk here is quite lazy on my part. It was just a recasting of the very questions that we're going to work our way through. And again, the thought is that we might as well spread the net, throw the net as broadly as we can, and encourage others in the constituencies to chime in. And then Liz pointed out that it would be a really good idea to have a sense of that constituency process went. So the first two questions really are more process questions, you know, how many people participated, how did you arrive at your conclusions. I think this can be quite informal in this round, and I wouldn't stress myself out over answering these first two questions. For example, I think in the business constituency, we'll probably send this out via email to the list, get comments back, collect them in a shared document, send that shared document out to the list, get final comments, and that will be that. And I think that for this round, that's probably sufficient. Wendy?
I'm sorry to be jumping in late with a question about the process, but I wonder, I know the PDP puts these constituency statements first, but it seems to be strange for us to be making statements of position before doing the investigation and consideration of the facts that might lead us to our positions.
Yeah, and I almost renamed this, and because I thought that might be confusing. In that, in a way, this is really more constituency input than it is a statement of position.
Right, and I fear that by calling it position, we're causing people to become more wedded to them than they might.
Yeah, that's a good idea. In fact, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to bother your eyes for a minute. I'm going to start recording action items here.
Yeah, this is Liz. I think we can edit that pretty easily and say instead of position, you know, some input or, you know, perspective or, you know, some appropriate other word that isn't as narrow.
Good call. Good catch. Anybody disagree with this?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's a good refinement. and it will make it. I agree with you, Wendy. I really don't want people to get terribly wedded to these positions. This is really more So somebody's talking on another line, and we can hear you. Sorry about that.
And it's Liz. If I'll just jump in quickly, Wendy, if you have a thought, if perspective sounds okay, or viewpoint, or you know whatever word you think, feel free to email it to me or post it. But I can you know edit that and take that as an action item.
Thanks.
Okay. I'm gonna jump back to wherever I was. Hang on a minute. I'm lost in my own computer. Help me.
You're doing a fine job so far.
I know, but
we're all impressed. So
I just got totally lost. Okay, here we go. So that's the first good refinement. I'm not going to edit these on the air. That gets a little complicated, but we've got an action item to fix that. Other thoughts on that? That was exactly what I want us to do. Is as I'm blathering along, raise your hand. Interrupt me. Any kind of correction is great. That's just what I'm after. I'm hearing nothing, and so I'm going to say that, I'm going to put it to you, and I'm going to do my little pause. This is your chance to sort of speak now or forever hold your peace on this first round template. And then on the second round one, I think we're probably going to have to put a little bit more work into that because that's going to be a more formal process and because people are going to be coming up with positions that we're going to need to work through. But for this one, are we okay? Cool. All right. Well, we are chugging right along here, folks. And one of the problems with a group this large is that you do get to listen to your chair a lot more. Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, it takes about 5 seconds, which is about the time that you pause to go from mute to non-mute mode. So you need to increase the length of your pauses if you're looking for response. Have you written any of this up, or are we just catching this in our ears, in one ear and out the other?
Oh, no, this is all coming off of the wikis that we've got for our work group. And,
but so I don't like seeing even an agenda for the meeting, so...
Yeah, the agenda is not on the work group.
Kind of spontaneous.
No, the agenda got published in email a while ago. And are you on the... on the Adobe Connect,
yeah. So,
that agenda is sort of this thing. That's the agenda. That's what we're working through. And so we're here on
that. And what part of this can be saved locally to each participant's machine?
I don't believe that any of this can go locally. It will. The notes in this will go out to the wiki. I suppose you could do screenshots. That would probably be about it. But I don't think that the Adobe Connect lets you capture text when I'm sharing the screen like this. This is just a screen saver thing.
Thank you very much.
Any other... Somebody just tried to mute. Somebody remind me of what the number to dial is to mute. Because that pair of tones went into my ear at pretty high volume. Anybody remember?
Star 6.
Star 6, is that what mutes? Thanks, Glenn.
And we've just had Joseph, Joe Santiver, who has joined.
Oh, great. Hi, Joe.
Sorry about running away.
That's okay. Things happen. I'm going to leave you to your own devices rather than catch you up, but if you go 10 minutes and are still befuddled, feel free to ping me and I'll double back.
Not a problem. I'm on the Adobe thing too, so not a problem there.
Cool. Thanks a lot, Joe. Okay, so we are now actually out of the processy kinds of stuff, and the rest of the meeting, as far as I'm concerned, can be diving right into the 10 questions And we'll just, my thought is to start at the first one and go through the last one and go as fast or slow as we need to and see what we wind up with. With the only other agenda item really being, I'll take about 5 minutes at the end of the meeting to stop and get your reactions as to how the meeting went, things I can do better in the future, stuff like that. So without further ado, let me expand this to show you the 10 questions. And what I'm going to basically do is try to be your note taker on the screen. So for those of you like Michael Rodenbaugh, let's try and be clear in the phone part as well, but I'll try and capture all of this in notes, and that set of notes will pretty much get transcribed straight out to the wiki. So, starting right off, who benefits from fast flux and who's harmed? Don't be shy. I'm ready for someone who benefits from fast flux. Oh, no, talk at once.
This is Joe. The folks who benefit the most, I think, are those who can't otherwise obtain stable hosting because of the nature of what's being hosted. So examples of that include things like intellectual property infringing content, child pornography, malware, etc.
And Wendy will just add to the list, but it might also include those seeking to avoid censorship in their local network or country.
I can't see anything on the screen now. Is that for everyone or just me? This is Ihab Shrein, sorry.
I can't tell. Can others see?
I raised my hand, by the way, but I didn't get any response. Now I see it.
Oh, good. I'm not sure what happened there. Sorry about that.
Can I speak since I raised my hand, or should I wait till...
No, go ahead, as long as you're on the air.
Yeah, some of what we are seeing here is that, this fast flux networking is heavily used in the fraud arena / anti-phishing world. And practically, we have major... influx of such attacks happening against our customers. So one of the things that we are seeing is that these fast flux for rent networks are heavily utilized, and as everyone knows, the fraud world is benefiting from fast flux networking.
And conversely, who is harmed? You started to talk about your customers. Let's start adding on to that list of
The entities which are harmed are plenty. Let's begin with financial institutions, government agencies, online auctions, payment services, the influx of pay-per-click, illegitimate pay-per-click, that is, the gambling world. And the list goes on and on and on. These are the verticals that are majorly harmed by the fast flux networks out there.
Okay, I got a bunch of people with their hands up, and I don't know how to determine order. That's something I'm going to have to learn. So, somebody with your hand up, just chime right in.
Dave.
Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, Dave.
Dave?
Yeah?
Go ahead.
I actually put a fairly long list together as one of the first emails, and rather than try to read that, maybe what you can do is transcribe it out of band. I mean, it was... Yeah, I went through a lot of the things that Joe has already mentioned. There's some overlap with what's been said, but there were some others.
That's a good idea. Let me push that down into the action items.
I think posing lists like that, using email and then being able to discuss whether or not we want to add or prune is a little bit more efficient than trying to do that in real time and Adobe Connect, just an observation.
That's a good idea. So maybe one little, I want to do this first. Maybe one of the sort of meeting preparation topics is develop a draft of each section prior to the call. As you can tell by now, I can't spell or type my way out of a wet paper bag. Sorry about that. So that we're in editing mode rather than creating mode. That makes sense to folks? If so, what we might try to do, scan down this list and see if... are there others like Dave who have either a lot of ideas or have already written some stuff that we could loose on the wiki?
There was a whole thread on it, so it's worth grabbing off the email archive.
Right, and I think what I want to do now is, now that I've sort of got the bucket set up on the wiki, I don't feel a compelling need to be the only editor of the wiki. And so if somebody wanted to go through those email threads and sort of pound into the wiki, transcribe into the wiki, that would be terrific. Does that work? Dave, would you be willing, for example, to go in and pound your list into the bucket on the wiki for this first chunk?
I think that doing it in two places is very frustrating. So I'm not objecting to the wiki. It's just that we have other conventions and other committees, and it's a duplication of work.
I think that what I'd encourage us to do is, now that the wiki is structured a bit, don't use the email lists for the conversations. Try to use the wikis instead.
Negative.
Wiki is pull and email is push. And I think that there are a lot of people on the committee who are accustomed to push, because in fact it is more proactive. I don't know. Maybe I'm just speaking out of turn.
That's all right. Okay. Hey, somebody just chimed in and I didn't hear you.
This is Eric Renner Williams. Like Dave, I also wrote significantly prior to this call.
Yeah.
Like Dave, I also think that we're replicating media with to little effect, and I concur with Dave on everything that he said, and I'll go back to you.
Okay. Ow, boy, I'll tell you, however you do that, that really hurts. Okay, so what we could do is we could appoint, eventually, I don't want to leave behind a series of email threads. I want to leave behind a structured document that we can push on, because my goal for all of this is ultimately is a report. And my thought was that the wiki is sort of an interim step, practically the final destination step to the report. So one of the ways we could do this is anoint a few people who would extract stuff from the email threads and periodically post it to the wiki, if that's sort of a reasonable middle ground. How does that suit people? Again?
What was the solution?
We're not quite there yet. sort of teetering on the notion that most of the conversation will tend to happen via email.
Right.
But that that there's then a step of extracting from the email,
right,
posting that to the wiki, and maybe using those posted commentaries.
Mike, this is Liz. I have a suggestion.
Okay.
I think one thing that would be helpful is for those who are for those who are sharing an email, you know, having a real dialogue about content, to as much as possible focus the content on how would you phrase an answer to a question or be responsive to a specific topic rather than, and then if you need footnotes or substantiating examples or anecdotes that, you know, follow some thread, handle that another way so that you're not doing a lot of editing or crunching of random emails to try to incorporate them into the wiki, but that everyone participate in the group discussion and the threads in such a way that it is targeted at a joint statement or an end result itself, to try to combine the methodology into, if email is what works for folks, to try to get it as much as possible crystallized in the email text. So that you're not trying to go back afterwards and recreate what 8 people said.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. To rephrase that, one of the things that I ran into when I looked at that email thread was that it was awfully hard to pull an answer to our question out of them. And so if the email threads could be structured in such a way that, you know, maybe the subject of the email is that question, who benefits from fast Lux and who is harmed, that would be good. And then if during the email thread people were essentially editing statements that could be just stapled in underneath that, that would also help a lot. Does that work as sort of a middle ground between the email folks and the wiki folks?
And by the way, then as staff, I mean, I'm willing to then extract, you know, the upshots of these threads and get them into the wiki on some regular appropriate basis so that we keep the wiki in line. I mean, that's, support that.
You know, I think another neat thing about that is that then what we can do if the threads produce a disagreement, then we can start to work on resolving those on these calls, which is a good use of our time, I think. Okay, that being the case, perhaps we don't continue this call right now, but rather give ourselves a homework assignment to, I don't know, maybe we have email threads around the first 4 questions and try to converse about that via email over the next week and get a summary of that up to the wiki by no later than Thursday next week so that people can read it prior to the call. And
Mike, it's Liz. I just have an expanded thought about that. I think that's a great idea if people are willing to do that. And one way to kick it off is if someone were willing to hold a pen on each question just to start with ideas, just a starting place for how they would answer the question, even in bullets. Even if you could take volunteers for the 4 questions now, it might be easier to have people commenting, reacting, and augmenting something that someone throws out there rather than, you know, everyone looking virtually at everyone else wondering who's going to start. So that's just a way to take that one step further if people want to go that route.
I think that fits right into our action item. What if we volunteers to craft a first round email about each of the first 4 questions. So can we get some volunteers? That would be neat. Dave, you want to volunteer for one or more than one of those?
When do you want it by?
I think it'd be good to get the first crack out of the gates within the next day or two, so that then the email conversation over the next 4 or 5 days can refine that.
As far as I'm concerned, I'll put a subject line on what I've already sent. I don't have anything new to say, so it's just a resend of something I sent 2 weeks ago.
That's fine.
Okay.
But you might want to go through it with an eye to the conversation we just had about directly answering the question.
That's what I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I just can't quite recall your...
Right, and that's okay. I mean, you were on vacation. I don't expect you to remember what I sent while you were on vacation. So.
Okay, so Dave, do you want to do question? Do you want to do all four questions, or do you want to do the first?
The one I was going to do is who benefits and who's harmed, and I kicked that off, so I'll kick it off again.
Okay.
I think that there are some things that Wendy had mentioned, that Eric had mentioned, and Joe had mentioned that are all complementary, with a little bit of overlap. Forgive me if I've forgotten anyone else, but like you, I don't remember every email from 2 weeks ago. So.
Okay. So we need volunteers for the next three. Does somebody want to kick us off on who benefits from cessation?
Before we commit to this plan, could we just quickly address how it's going to impact our schedule?
I don't think it's going to hurt our schedule much. Basically, part of the reason I'm so cheerful about this idea is that I don't think it'll impact the schedule. Basically, what we will wind up with is arriving at the same milestone date via a different path.
So we're just going to break up the questions and handle so many each week, and then by August 5th, we'll have already answered all of them? Is that what you have in mind?
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, actually, my goal is to have the answers done by July 25th, so that then we can hammer on our... I don't want to confuse your screens with dates, but in terms of the way this is laying out, I think it's going to fit in the same schedule without a change.
So that means to address all of them within the next 2 weeks?
Yes. First draft, first try. Not striving necessarily entirely for consensus at that point, but get all the ideas out on the table within the next couple of weeks. And so one way to do this would be to try and launch even more threads. So rather than just the first four, maybe go through the first half. And in that case, we could go down a little bit deeper and pick up the registrants and users and stuff. And then what that would do is the first half of these questions are really who's affected, and the second half of the question really focus on what are we going to do about it. And so maybe the thing to do is break this into two chunks like that and spend the next week via email crafting those who's affected statements, and then the subsequent week we could focus on those last four. What are we going to do about it from a technical standpoint, from a policy standpoint? How does that sit with people? Because I think these first six are all sort of, in a way, the same question with different facets that need to be expanded. And then the last four are also sort of the same question with different facets. So what if we took volunteers for the first six questions for email this week. And we'll have sort of this frenzy of email about who's affected. And the goal would be to get a set of statements out on the wiki about this. Aaron, go ahead.
You're speaking to Greg, Aaron?
Yeah, sorry.
Hi. I'll take the registry operator question. And then I have another comment. I raised a question on the public board. A lot of these six questions are basically asking us to quantify the problem that we're being asked to solve. For instance, who's harmed, who's taking advantage of FastFlex hosting, and so on. I think one of our duties is to get some good data to quantify the problem or to explain its scope. I don't think we can come to any conclusions or possible policies unless we understand the problem fully. So I think it's incumbent upon us to do some outreach to get some data or some research. Now, we might be able to accomplish some of that by going to our constituencies and asking the members what they can tell us if they have any information on hand. Dave Piscatello and Rod Rasmussen and I also have an opportunity to go to the anti-phishing working group and solicit information from that membership, because we have a lot of security companies and banks and so on in that group. But for instance, I've never seen a basic accounting of how many FastFlex domains might be out there, or how long they live, or whether a lot of them are all run by the same party or parties. And that's information I would like to see. But I open that up for comments.
I love it. Others?
This is the Ab Shrain. I can comment on some of this. I can probably divide some stats on the anti-phishing side of the world, which is involved with the FastFlex networks. And normally they last for a certain period of time, but you have to take certain measures to defuse that particular attack or fraud campaign against a certain financial institution, per se, or a government agency. So we do have some of that statistics that probably I can share with you. As for the numbers of FastFlex networks and how they formulate on the Internet, we do know that there is no one collection point by which it can reflect exactly what transpires out there and have a full detail. And that was one of the things I wanted to propose to this team. If we were to figure out a way to gather as much information as possible to reflect what exactly is taking place on the Internet, our company, for example, Device Solutions, geared toward a certain segment involved with FastFlex networks. And I do see the other verticals being affected drastically, but I don't see any takers in the world to go handle these problems.
So, to put words in your mouth, are you saying that in addition to Greg's notion, that we go out and collect existing data, are you suggesting that we may also need to charter some new kinds of data gathering activities?
Yes. I think what's happening out there, where when people build their honeypots and how they gather such information, some of these honeypots are geared toward just detecting malware. Others are geared toward detecting one other form, where you will see lots of research being conducted. A lot of companies do claim that they have this presence on the Internet. However, not even one single company can come and say, or one single entity or agency can come and say, here is exactly what's happening on the Internet, which, for example, involves with FastFlex. And they can segment that by saying, this is the effect of spam on the Internet as it relates to FastFlex networks. This is the effect of pay-per-click as a result of FastFlex networks or utilizing FastFlex networks. And, of course, the gambling side and the financial side. So these vertigos are all affected by one way or one form of fast flux networking out there. The challenge is to gather all that information. You see a lot of PowerPoints reflecting, oh, this is happening, but there is no one single entity collecting such data. We're collecting a lot of data ourselves in our company. However, our products are geared toward one vertical, and that's what we, this is how we make our money. But I don't see any initiatives out there to go and say, here's what's happening, and I am the source of, or the authoritative source on what is happening on the Internet, and if you would like to get data from us, share this with us. As I just heard one last comment, the anti-phishing working group got formulated that way by having all the reported fish to go to one entity, and then someone or some company has to go through that inbox to sift through it, is it a fish or not. By the way, I can go on and on this topic. I don't want to take it.
That's okay. I think we've all got...
This is what I do for a living, so it's...
Right. It's not a problem. But you raise an interesting question, and it's one that I think came up in some of the email. Some of this gets a bit out of scope for the working group, but this would be, I think, a good forum or platform to have that discussion, perhaps in the best practices part of our work, where we don't necessarily suggest policy, but we point to good suggestions for the industry.
Mike, it's Liz. If I could just jump in with some further thought here. It is appropriate for the group, you know, the experts to conclude that, gee, more data gathering is needed, more data analysis is needed, and or more specific research, you know, and information is needed in order to formulate, to answer certain questions or to formulate certain positions. In other words, you know, to the degree this is a complex area where there are still gaps in information or understanding, it is quite appropriate for this group to make recommendations to the council that steps be taken in research. There's, you know, potentially could be some funding available or staff ability to support research in certain areas that's targeted and within scope, or that would, you know, inform the debate in some way. And I just want to give the group the opportunity to feel like it has some latitude in pursuing where there are clearly information gaps that are, you know, needed before drawing conclusions about anything, that's a very reasonable thing. But to the degree that we could be as targeted about what those gaps are and how they might be filled, we could then, the group is free to make recommendations to the council during this process or at the end of the process in the context of, you know, any step in the process. That is quite appropriate, and I would say more than appropriate, because you are the experts on the ground to begin with, and to the degree that you see information gaps or analysis gaps or research gaps, you know, we have to be informed by that and use that information and those insights wisely.
How about this? What if we take Greg's suggestion as an immediate action item, which is let's go out to our respective constituencies and folks like the anti-phishing working group and so on, and gather up as much of the existing data as we can quickly.
And if I could jump in again, perhaps the more precise question is if we could ask and even add it to our charter, to be bold, something along the lines of what are the data gaps that exist and how, from the viewpoint of these experts, and how might they be filled with either other research that's out there and available or other research that needs to be done, so that we really try to nail down with precision what I'm working on the Who Is work study group, where we're looking at what studies need to be done. So precision with studies and hypotheses that make sense are very much on my mind, and using the talent of this group, if that's what's called for, to tee that up is another real added value you can bring. So taking Greg's idea, you know, to the next step and developing that, if that's a right answer or a right interim step, is encouraged.
Cool. Somebody just took a breath to speak. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Ehab Shrem again. I do agree that we need to speak with groups such as the Anti-Phishing Working Group, but just keep in mind they're looking at a slice of the problem, not the entire problem. While this is a very good approach, we have to look at the other segments by which FastFlex networks are being utilized. And this is what I was referring to, breadth of how FastFlex networks are being used. Everyone talks about it in big conferences, but no one is really gathering all that data in one location by which they are the entity by which they are the authoritative entity, which shares data and describes data to the masses. And that's while you see a lot of verticals, but you don't see collectors of such information.
See if this is a friendly amendment for what I think you're saying. Yeah, what if we went out to the and got the existing data as quickly as we can from whoever. I just put in the Anti-Phishing Working Group because that rolled off Greg's tongue. But if there are other places, let's go there as well. And one of the goals of that outreach effort would be to identify what those gaps that you're talking about are. It may be that there are gaps. It may be that there are overlaps. It may be that there are different definitions. Sometimes people are counting apples and oranges and can't really put those numbers together. But get a sense of the quality of the data that's available now, along with obtaining it, because I think it is, you know, Greg raises a really good point, which is it's good to have facts when we're having these conversations. But let's gather the facts with an eye to gathering the facts, but also in determining what other facts aren't available. And then fold that part of the effort into essentially a recommendation, like Liz was saying. And, you know, I don't think that we're going to have time to actually go out and conduct that research, but I think from what I'm hearing from Liz and others, we certainly could encourage that happen in the future. Now, somebody's hand went up, and then it went away so fast that I missed it. But whoever stuck your hand up, go ahead. Mark, I guess. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a question. I'm more oriented toward figuring out solutions to the problem, you know, and of course after the problem is defined. And I would sort of like to know, you know, what the things are that are possible for us to do, what the current thinking is on how to solve those problems and how to, you know, come up with, you know, workable suggestions on, you know, other solutions that might be possible. I'm still trying to grasp the whole thing, and this is very new to me. So if you could talk the solution end of it, I would appreciate it.
I think that the one answer to that question is maybe stay tuned until next week, you know, and clearly by the time we get to the second half of this list of questions, that's where best practices, new ideas, best approach, you know, there's the whole discussion to have about that I think David raised, which is let's be careful that we don't propose something that just moves people off what they do now into something that's even harder to intervene against later. And what I'm trying to do on this call is steer us a little bit away from that part of the conversation just to keep our conversation focused, but clearly that's where a lot of the interest is going to lie. So if we can hang on to that one until next week, I think then that's when that one really gets rolling. Is that okay?
Okay. That's part of what I wanted to understand is where that is. I can wait.
I think it's certainly not for lack of interest. It's just a matter of trying to keep some sort of conversational thread going. And that's where I like this notion of sort of spins in half. Again, I'm back to sort of the first six seem to be who's affected and how, and then the last four seem to be what are we going to do about it? And if I can sort of drag us, are we sort of done with the data research thing? And if so, can we get some volunteers? I heard some people sort of self-volunteered to especially do this outreach thing. Can we put some names behind that one so that folks feel like they owe the group a little something?
It's Rod Atkinson.
Rod, how are you?
I've already volunteered myself on the data gathering, but I wanted to add to this conversation. I think it's exactly what we need to be talking about. Is built on this. I don't think we need to understand it entirely 100%, but we do need to understand, you know, the level of harm that we're seeing. I think that besides APWG, we have groups like Moss, we have the Botnet Coalition folks. I think there are a lot of overlaps, and many of us are involved in those various organizations. But a lot of those gaps, as it were, will be filled in by looking at the, you know, the piece of the elephant, as it were, that we all have a view of. One of the things that I don't think we're hearing covered, which is also important, is the legitimate uses of Fastlux and who might be able to gather that information. Because that is something that, you know, if we're, you know, in the anti-fraud world, we're not so, you know, we're not going out and checking to find out where those things are. But we certainly know that there are some uses for that, and it would be good to gather some real data about that rather than having just the anecdotes that we've heard up until this point. So I would put that out to somebody who might be in that part of the space to take a look at that side of things as well. But we certainly have, I think, on the fraud side, between university researchers, which are several, Joe's got some excellent data that matter, who's already on the group, but there's several other folks out there that are gathering this kind of information and looking at it from more of a holistic view. Between those folks and then the various verticals, I think we can get a good picture on the fraud side. So I think that outreach is going to be happening. I'm going to be working with Dave and Greg on the outreach, and anybody else who can. Love to help.
Cool. Let me tie off the volunteers on that, and then maybe we can get some volunteers for... I agree. I was thinking about the legitimate users, and the kind of people that we need to talk to about that are probably the data center managers for places like Google and Yahoo and stuff like that, and we need to figure out how to get a hold of those people and get their opinions. If we've got anybody in this group that can reach those folks, that would be a fantastic addition. Greg has got his hand up. Go ahead, Greg.
Rod and myself and Dave Piscatello are active in APWG, so I think the three of us are probably happy to go to APWG specifically.
Okay.
So we'll volunteer for that. Okay. APWG. The legitimate uses are interesting. Wendy earlier in the call mentioned, I think, users who are using the method to circumvent censorship, for example, wondered if she knew some ways to get some information about that.
By definition, the people trying to circumvent censorship are reluctant to talk about all the ways that they're trying to do it. I will see what information I can gather.
That would be great. I'll put you down as the volunteer, Wendy, and with the understanding that it may be hard to get much in the way of definitive information.
I'll be happy to help Wendy on this also.
Okay. This folk?
Eric Linder Williams.
How about the big data center?
I could ask it to Yahoo, Mike.
Okay.
and probably by extension to Akamai.
And I can get to Thomson Reuters. They're here in. That's probably a good enough list.
Question?
Go ahead.
Do you want to go ahead and clarify actually what we're talking about in terms of fast flux via just things that have short TTLs? Because I think there may be some confusion there.
That's a good question. And maybe we need that definition before we go out for data, hey?
And, you know, part of it is, you know, for me at least, I think of fast flux as being things hosted on, compromised machines.
I don't necessarily think of them just that way. That's certainly a big part, but there are other, hosting companies that do it for their customers, like so-called bulletproof hosting.
Okay, so let's just rattle off a few. Is there a definition existing out there in the materials that have been prepared prior to this?
Yes.
If so, can somebody very quickly find it and rattle that definition off for us?
There's more than one. I think there's at least two, because there's one in the FSAC course and there's one in the issue.
Yes.
Do they largely...
They're pretty consistent.
They're very consistent. Very
okay. Can we essentially adopt that as our definition for when we go out?
Why don't we, I'll take the action item of excerpting both and posting them.
So this is Dave. One of the threads that has been, continuing since we started the email is discusses whether continuing to focus primarily on what is called fast flux may actually result in a policy that won't be very useful by the time we even respond to the to the GNSO in Paris. I'm sorry, in Cairo. And so one thing I would like to try to do is make certain that we're in agreement that we're only going to look at fast flux, or that we're going to look at evasion techniques and policies that help help a broad range of evasion techniques, among which fast flux is one.
Yeah, I commented on that part of the thread. Let me throw that comment out again. I'm a little nervous about expanding our scope a whole lot. I'm very aware of the issue that you're raising, David, and don't want to make that mistake. But at the same time, I don't want to get this so broad that we basically are suddenly trying to boil the whole ocean here. Is there some way that we can thread the needle on this so that we can deliver something to the GNSO, perhaps, for the record?
If I could make a suggestion on that, Mike, Dave. Let's do what we got right now, right? I mean, you guys said the work is very clear, it's charter. But let's take note on what other issues are outside of this charter that might, be the premises for yet another charter for a next working group. But I don't think, we have a charter to do more than what's set out in our charter, right? So let's not get it out of control.
So I'm going to put this in an action item right now, but I really think that this becomes part of our recommendations. I think one of the recommendations is the very point that you raised, David, which is be very, very careful developing this policy in such a way that either A, it's too narrow to be really useful, or B, actually causes harm. And then as a result of that conversation, perhaps suggest subsequent courses of study, either for this working group or another one. But I'm really edgy about expanding the scope of this one, partly because I think we would run out of time pretty quickly. So is it all right to not dread, but to include it as part of our recommendations instead?
Well, I mean, I'm not trying to be oppositional here. I just think that we are really answering the wrong question. And, you know, if we want to focus on this question, I will do my best to answer this question well. But I think in the long run, this is not as productive as looking at the problem in a broader context. That's all I'll say on it.
Well, I think it's a very good point, but I think that the time to have this conversation is when the work groups are being chartered. And what we need to do is speak to subsequent work groups and say, we executed the charter you gave us, but we have these concerns about that charter.
But that's fine. You know,
et cetera, et cetera. Because, you know, I don't want to lose those thoughts. At the same time, I don't want to broaden this one a lot because we really don't have authority to do that. And so the compromise that I sort of worked out in my own head was, let's make sure that we've got a really compelling chunk of the recommendations that talks to that issue so that subsequent work groups really do answer the right question. And to that end, I'm not going to be terribly upset if we're not super aggressive in the policies that we recommend for that very reason. I would rather come up with good recommendations that guide future work than unnecessarily or perhaps even harmful policy at this stage of the game. I think that's the way to navigate that particular problem, is to build that into our recommendations rather than try and modify our charter on the fly.
This is Eric Linder, William. I concur with David that the question is not necessarily well posed and the starting point is not necessarily the correct starting point. That said, carrying the issue until the next working group, whenever that may be, starts seems optimistic that there will be a next working group. Finally, speaking as the registrar constituency was opposed to a PDP in the first place. We preferred best practices documents. So the idea of starting from a less than correct starting point and arriving at a policy by whatever means is not that attractive to the registrar constituency, and this is still a bottoms-up consensus-based process.
So does my notion of making sure that we get it right for the... I mean, I think one way to finesse that is to run pretty hard in the question. We do have a best practices question to answer right here. It seems to me that what we could do is write a lot in that area. And not embed them as policy, but simply document them as great best practices that would move the ball forward in the way you're describing.
But also, it's Liz, if there's some fundamental flaw in the charter, guys, you know, let's tee that up. The council needs guidance in this. You're the expert. This was a rather technical area. You know, the charter was based on the issues report that I wrote, but it was based on the FSAC report. There's a lot of need here, I can tell you, because this was staff's position to begin with, so to more informed dialogue, more discussion, get some experts in a room, that this is the first cut at that. If, you know, to Dave's point and Eric's point, if you feel strongly that there's something misphrased in that, please let's just tee that up and, you know, bring it to the council early. We don't have an artificial wall here that prevents us from doing that, and I take responsibility for you know, and by the way, what I recall in the discussion about creating the charter and the registrar's view was their biggest concern was not launching into a PDP prematurely, which I totally, from the staff perspective, supported and thought was really important, once again, to get it right in the data gathering, to get it right in the framing of the issues, to get it right in the scope questions about, you know, ICANN consensus policies being focused you know, especially in the GNSO, on, you know, GTLD service providers and on contracted parties that we have relationships with. The evolution of best practices is an important alternative. I mean, the whole point was really to be smart here, not to be misguided in how we're gathering. So I just want to give, again, I don't want to start at square one. Mike is, you know, marching to an important direction, but if there is a fundamental flaw, let's tee it up and move on.
Yeah, that's fine. Let's do that, but it's not, we don't want to delay the work we have on before us now. You know, Eric, the registrar certainly had ample opportunity to comment on the draft charter and everything else. You guys cleared over the wrong way. Other than it's time to bring that up. But if you want to bring it up now, let's hear it. No problem. But I don't want to be delayed. We've got a group forum here to answer some important questions that can go beyond this issue in the future, but let's focus on this issue now.
The voice quality on that portion of the call wasn't very good, at least at my end. It was pretty choppy.
Yeah, I think Mike Rodenbaugh is coming in by cell phone.
I am, so if I'm sorry if I wasn't clear there, I'll share my comments for the email list in the wiki.
Okay, I can kind of understand you, Mike.
All right.
I think that the issue sort of boils into one of momentum. I think if we stop now and reframe our charter, we'll probably lose a fair amount of time getting that new charter approved. And I guess at this point, I'd just like people to get on agree-disagree thing on your respective names on the Adobe Gizmo. This leaves out folks like Rodenbaugh, who's not on Adobe, but I'd just like to get a sense of, are people more interested in carrying on and meeting this schedule with all the caveats that I described about making recommendations for the subsequent one, or are people more inclined to reframe the charter, set the timetable back? So to make this a yes-no question, how many people want to reframe the charter? If you want to reframe the charter, hit agree on your little name gizmo on the Adobe Connect thing. If you want to carry on, don't do anything.
Randy Vaughn here. I tend to agree with Joe and look at the issues report and then the which basically points out that FastFlux is an issue with botnets and compromised machines. And then when I look at the working group charter, there's basically just an excerpt of that which omits the very important flavor of the use of maliciousness or compromised machines or botnets or that type of thing. So whereas we see some disagreement on things like censorship, I believe what we're looking at basically is just a little bit clearer definition of what's going on there. So I'm going to put agree.
This is Christian. I think that part of the reason that the definition is so broad, though, is a recognition that any action that we take is not just going to impact these uses with compromised machines, but may well in other legitimate uses, and we want to have the information on what that impact will be before making any decisions.
Okay, that makes sense.
Others? This is a good conversation, a useful thing, I think. We're sort of split at this point. We've sort of got about a 50-50 divide between clarify. Now, if we clarified the way you just described, would that meet the need that Dave originally raised, which is if we slightly expanded the definition of FastFlux to include the piece of the I think it was the ESSAC definition that got left out. Would that address the issue that you're raising, Dave? Because that I think we could do really quick. I think we could just, in amongst ourselves, define fast flux any way we wanted to and carry on from there. Then I don't think we would slow down at all. Could we wiggle through it that way?
This is the half-time. Can I make a comment?
Sure, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead, excuse me.
Hello?
There we go.
Yeah, oh, great. Okay, I think what we probably can define it, and I'm trying to simplify it so that we can proceed with our charter. In terms of the legitimate fast flux networks, these are controlled environments by which web hosting providers and other ISPs do use these tactics in a legitimate way to conduct their day-to-day business. However, the other side of the coin, which is the illegitimate fast flux network usage, which would be hacking, say, the masses, and these hacked servers or illegitimate servers, they're all over the map. They're residing on multiple subnets within ISPs, they cross boundaries and so forth. So we can create a distinction between the two by saying controlled environment and uncontrolled environment. And you can this way devise your recommendations accordingly, without confusing the two, because it's very clear that fast flux networking does affect the world from a fraud-centric point of view by having all these hacked machines out there on the masses, and the machines could reside on any network within any ISP within any country, as you know.
Thanks.
Sure.
How's this notion of expanding, not changing our charter per se, but changing the fast flux definition to be the broader one that was in the ESSAC report, go to addressing the issue that you raised? Dave, I'm going to kind of put this one back in your lap just to see if this is feasible.
I can't tell whether I'm on mute or off at this point.
You're okay. I can hear you.
Yeah. It's not the definition in the ESSAC report that I'm concerned about. It's that the ESSAC report is almost a year old. And you know, criminals are much more flexible and adaptive than policy. And many of the things that we describe in the fast flux, advisory, are still being used, but there are also other techniques that have emerged that don't exhibit the same characteristics. But I want to make certain is that we don't simply create policy that solves something that is not the anticipated most common attack method a year from now, because the policy is going to always move more slowly than the attackers. What I want to do is certain that we provide enough information to allow policymakers to understand that there is a broad set of issues here, and that perhaps, as an example, a registrar should be granted more latitude in being able to take corrective actions on their own. I'm not necessarily saying that is exactly what we want to say, but I wanted to leave that opportunity open, as opposed to going in and saying, well, registrars should never allow QTLs less than 30 minutes. I don't think that's a very useful conclusion for this kind of group to come up with. So we don't want to just look at TTLs, and I've seen too many emails looking at monitoring TTLs and monitoring setting limits and rate limiting. Those are things that ESSAC recommended a year ago based on the best available knowledge a year ago. We have to recognize that those things change, and what we want to do is learn from the fact that change and make a concerted effort to provide a policy framework where registrars can be proactive in eliminating DNS abuses.
getting more and more enamored with the idea of loosely interpreting our charter so that we can carry on, because we have such a great group and we have all this good stuff going on, and I hate to lose all that momentum while we go back. And I don't want to agree with that.
What I want to do is make certain that, you know, and I'm comfortable with saying that, you know, we think that we can answer these questions to the best of our knowledge, but have a conclusion that says this is only one aspect of what, you know, of what policy might emerge to combat the broader set of abuses and capture some of what we've just talked about here, because I don't think it's generally known.
Right.
Hey, honestly, Dave, everybody, I'd like those other issues put on the table ASAP. Maybe we need to start another policy development process. Or maybe we need to change the charter to get this group to focus on multiple issues, if they're willing. You know, let's get it out there. That's fine. But I also don't want to lose sight of the questions that are in front of us. I want to take our time to answer them. Some of the way I look at it is, I think the way a lot of anti-fiction theory looks at it. You got to just keep taking away tools of the bad guys. You got to knock down one registry after registry after registry. You go to them, get them to change their policies. You know, you just got to keep pushing them into a corner. You can't just give up and say, well, we can't solve the whole problem. So let's talk. My point.
Yeah, that cell phone connection of yours is pretty rugged, Mike. I think I got that. Let me offer the following. Let's keep going with the framework that we've got in front of us, all this work plan stuff and all the questions, et cetera, et cetera. But let's take in any opportunities that we have to write something, let's take the broader view of fast flux rather than the narrower view in what we write and what we talk about. And we'll essentially, I'm becoming persuaded that a slight broadening of the scope probably isn't going to make a whole lot of difference in terms of our schedule. And I agree with Dave that it would be a lot more useful if we solved today's problems in such a way that registrars, registries, and so on can also solve tomorrow's problems without having to have policy online. So what if we essentially left the infrastructure of this working group untouched, but collectively took a broad view of the flux problem rather than a narrow one? Does that work for folks? So we would not go back to the GNSO Council, because, you know, that cycle loses us a lot of time. It loses us at least a month. We'll just carry on, but with a broad definition of what our charter is rather than a narrow one. Is that okay?
Could you explain roughly what that broad definition would be?
I'm going to defer to smarter people than me that one. You know, and maybe what we ought to do is have an email thread about that rather than try and do it on this call. We could try it on this call. I mean, I was starting to write some points here as we went. Dave and others, Rod, are there definitions that are already written that are out there that are broad enough that we could use them, or do we need to write our own?
Excuse me, this is Randy again. I'm looking at the first two questions here, and which is basically who benefits from fast flux and who is harmed, and who would benefit from the cessation of the practice. I believe we ought to pay very careful attention to those, because I think once we get those two questions solidly answered, or at least satisfactorily answered, I think we might have a better idea of how we're proceeding. So those two questions seem very critical to me.
So maybe what we do is we let the definition emerge from this first round of conversation. How about that?
Yeah.
I think that that's a reasonable way to go, because I think that one thing we can point out is that a number of the people who are harmed by theft are also harmed by other evasion techniques that exploit the DNS and registration processes. And then we can enumerate those and say, for example, you don't have to fast flux the network. You can be adaptive to detection.
Right.
There are other ways that criminals will seek to evade detection, and what policy emerges ought to be sufficiently flexible to empower registrars and registrars to take appropriate action when they have compelling evidence that their resources are being abused.
Right. I wish you had a mental tape recorder and could have typed that.
I thought we had a transcription service.
Oh, that's right. We do. God, I've never done this with transcription before. Right. Cool. Okay. So I can go look at the transcripts of some of this.
This is Eric again.
Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt, David. The one thing that we lose by not communicating back to the CNSL that they didn't quite get it right at the beginning is that we're not getting them immediate feedback that they didn't quite get it right at the beginning.
What if we advised them of this, but we didn't ask? I'm a big fan of begging forgiveness rather than asking permission, just to keep things rolling. What if in the course of our initial reporting development, we transmitted that back to the GNSO that we corrected their charter just a little bit by broadening the definition to include some of these other issues, but didn't ask them permission, just beg forgiveness?
Well, I wouldn't beg for forgiveness, but I would inform them.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think we should inform them.
This is Christian. One danger of having an open definition of fast flux that includes all evasion techniques is it makes it very hard to answer that question, who will be harmed by the cessation of fast flux, because we don't know what exactly it is we're talking about stopping.
I think we just break it down into fast flux and then, other techniques that have similar harmful effects. So we can say, in the case of fast flux in particular, Here are some possible remedies, and here are the people affected. In other cases, we can just call that out. It requires us to do a second order analysis, not just assume that this is the one attack model that we have to defeat.
Does that work for folks?
This is Eric Eckenberg.
Cool. Greg, you're still up there disagreeing. I don't know if it's just because my conversation has been so scintillating. Do you still have concerns of where we're at this point? Give him a couple minutes to get off mute. Yep. Thank you, sir.
I'm fine where we are.
Cool. All right. So let me summarize with this set of action items. What we're going to do is we're going to clarify the definition of fast flux during the process of answering the first several questions. God, I can't type for beans. Liz, you're going to lose the responsibility for this one.
I'm good with that.
I figured you might. And put these in hints. And I'm going to say we'll notify definition as it emerges no later than the initial report. We'll broaden definition to include other attack vectors the other highlights of this conversation we just had. That cover it? We broaden the definition to, we'll let the council know and we'll clarify and broaden. That work?
Works for me.
Cool. I think this was good work, people, this last little bit of the conversation. This is the kind of thing I'm hoping we'll do a lot. Because I think that we can get a heck of a lot of stuff done if we can work this well consistently. Now, I'm still working on volunteers to write some of those first-round answers. I don't want to let that go. So Dave has signed up for question number one. Greg is up for the registry operator ones, but let me give you your menu again. This one's the one I think David has signed up for. And this one's covered. How about some of these other ones? Do people want to take the lead on driving first draft of any of these?
This is Joe. I'm willing to go ahead and look at how Internet users are affected by fast flux hosting.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Gerald. Are you on the Adobe thing, Jared? Oh. So this was Gerald. Gerald? Correct?
That was Joe.
Joe, sorry. Now it's all coming together. We got three to go. Cessation. Registrar. And registrants. Anybody want to volunteer for it? This isn't like a massive job. This is just kicking off the email thread. I'm getting overwhelming.
Yeah, this is Eric. I'll pick the email thread and the registrar constituency.
Eric is going to. Which one do you want to take?
Registrar.
Registrar. Hey, Rodenbach, can I sign you up for registrants? If he's still there. He's probably being a good scout and he's all muted on his cell phone. We'll put Mike, and it'll either be Mike Rodenbach or it'll be Mike O'Connor. We'll do registrants. That leaves only one left. Registry, registrar, users. Oh, who's benefiting and harmed from cessation? Dave, is yours both cessation and the activity itself? Can you kick both of those off, or is the cessation one different enough that you don't want to take on that burden?
I mean, I can kick them off because I've had some conversations with Wendy, and I can do some out-of-band conversations with some of the other folks who can more clearly represent how Akamai and others use it in a positive way.
Cool. Okay, I'm gonna sign you up for that one. Benefits. No, I'm just gonna call it cessation for now. Okay. I think we have just arrived at a pretty good stopping point for the call. It's 10 minutes before the hour, and I don't feel like we want to tackle anything else real substantial except for the feedback on the call as it's gone so far. Maybe just take a quick stop before I do that. There are folks that have been on the call for quite a while and have not spoken either much or at all. This is sort of a time for you to jump in with your thoughts about what's been going on so far, and if we've missed anything or if there's anything that you'd like to add at this point. is in there. Go ahead, Mike.
This is Cal.
Go ahead, Cal.
Okay. I just wanted to ask how much motivation are we going to ascribe to the first question? We seem to have a predisposition that some people might have nefarious intentions to use fast flux, some altruistic, but that doesn't necessarily marry up with legal or illegal, because some people with altruistic intentions might have to use illegal methods to obtain the fast flux capability. Is that important in forming our policy? Do we really need to know whether the people that we're forming this policy for are in fact bad guys or good guys?
Well, bad guys and good guys are going to have very different interpretations depending on whom you ask, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so I think you're getting to the point of, you know, if people are using fast flux to enable a free speech channel or in a country that's attempting to block it, are they good guys or bad guys?
Well, I don't want to decide, actually.
I agree with you, but I'm saying that you and I may not want to decide, but certainly other people will. And, you know, how our response is viewed by certain CCTLDs, as an example, may well influence, you know, what we say.
Okay, so the I guess my question is that do we have an interpretation that merely describes the activity, or an interpretation that describes the motivation? Because the activity is simply to hide. The motivation might be cruel, and I'm not sure if listing motivations as a big long list is necessarily going to get us, because some will overweigh others. Free speech might be more important than malware. So I'm not sure if the end goal should be listing all the different motivations we can think of, which is how I feel that a lot of the discussions have travelled so far. There's discussions about, we use it for this and they use it for that. And I wonder, does that actually matter?
That's a profound question I don't have a glib answer to.
This is Christian. It seems to me that we're being asked to catalog those by the charter. We could, you know, put some gloss and say that, you know, we're not sure if it matters, but it seems that that's what we're being asked to do here.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the point that Cal raises, though, is a really good one, and I think this is another one that I'd like to make sure we don't forget. And when we get into writing some of the recommendation portions of this, that we acknowledge that. Because landing on one side or the other of this dilemma, in either case, you wind up with sort of some peculiar outcomes. Now, if you only do it by limiting an activity and leave out motivation entirely, you wind up with the possibility of throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I don't really know how to resolve that.
I think that you can put in the motivation without drawing a conclusion whether or not it's a, it is an appropriate or inappropriate motive. I mean, I don't think that,
My point was that you don't necessarily know the motive. These people are hiding under the point, and we will guess at some motives. We may be wrong, we may be right. We will not get anywhere close to full coverage. So the question is, knowing that, does motive matter at all?
Well, I guess in some cases it probably does, Kai. For example, fraud, identity theft, it's more reasonably universally considered as, a criminal activity. So that's an easy one. I think, there are others that are nowhere near as clear-cut.
But this is Liz. Wasn't the genesis of the question essentially because we wanted to determine whether there were legitimate uses of fast flux so that we wouldn't, if there were legitimate uses, whatever that means, however you define it, whatever the scope is, that we wouldn't implement policies to prohibit it or prevent it when it's serving legitimate purposes, or that at least we'd be mindful of what those legitimate purposes were, and not throw the baby out with the bathwater. I mean, I think that was the rationale behind the formulation of that, and Cal's point that, how valid is a statistical, smokestack chart of how everybody, much it's being used for this or that. I think it was really trying to just answer that threshold question so that subsequent questions about what should be done about it could factor that reality in.
I understand. I was making the point that you can take something like, an underground network that perpetuates free speech that runs on a fast flux environment. Many, many people would think that's a good thing. The regime that's being subverted doesn't. So saying it's a legitimate use is actually incorrect, because from the perspective of the regime or the sovereign nation, it's a criminal activity.
I agree with that, actually. That's exactly the problem that we face. I think that the motivation might align with our ideas of legitimacy, but it might contradict entirely legitimacy in other locations.
So what we end up with, if you speculate, let's say we come up with a set of measures, and we come up with a set of motivations. There are some motivations where the measures that we identify to prevent fast flux would be used to essentially eliminate the activity that many of us might find appropriate. Because ultimately, we don't have control over what a sovereign nation does or what a regime chooses to do. And this is no different in the virtual world than it is in the brick and mortar world, and in countries where they can't conduct a fair and legitimate election. So I think that political reality is with us, and I don't think that we can we can stop the process that we're going through now, because that political reality lies out in front of us.
Oh, I didn't hear Cal suggesting that we would stop.
No, I didn't either. I'm just sort of amplifying.
Yeah, I think that what I've gotten out of this conversation is that this is another important dimension of what we include in our conclusions, and that there is sort of this issue where, A, we can't probably ascribe motivations to people who are hiding, and B, the point that you made, which is it's in the eye of the beholder, the definition of legal and illegal. Gang, it's exactly top of the hour for me, and I want to adhere to our timing. So I'm going to draw the meeting to a close. I want to take a few seconds to review how the meeting went. Is this okay as a format? Did people feel like they were heard? Were there things that drove you crazy? Are there things I can do better? If this is all right, we'll keep doing the same. Wendy, go ahead.
Could we keep it to an hour and a half at maximum? 2 hours feels like a very long time.
Yeah, we all get a little tired. I would take that as a friendly amendment.
Thanks.
Kristen?
It seems to me that it might be beneficial to use this hand-raising function and to establish an order of speakers so that we can stay more or less organized.
Yeah, I agree. And a question for those in the group. Can those of you who are looking at my screen, can you now see the two raised hands, one from Christian and one from Eric, on your screen?
Yes.
Okay, then why don't we use that as the order thing, because I think those come in order.
Actually, it doesn't show up as raised hand on my screen.
It wouldn't be as a raised hand. It's in the screen of the little outlining tool that I'm using. I have two little green boxes in the lower right corner of my screen that show raised hands. Do you see those?
No.
If you do, those do come in order.
Look at the attendee list.
Now, well, the attendee list doesn't show people in order. It just shows people with raised hands.
I suggest you keep the chat box larger.
Which one is that? The chat box?
On my screen, it's the minuscule box in the lower left-hand corner.
Oh, well, let me see what happens if I do this. Hold on a minute.
And sure. Also, while you're mousing, how can we get a copy of the image on the larger screen, which presumably is larger than the actual screen shown?
The stuff that I've been typing into, you mean? The little outlining tool?
Yeah, it's been fun to watch. I wouldn't want to miss it now.
I thought what I would do is I would turn these into two kinds of documents. One would be an outlined Word-type document, text-type document, and then the other is a PDF. I can push these out as PDFs, and I would just put them out on the site as notes.
That'd be fine. Thank you.
Okay. Did the chat thing getting bigger work? It tried to.
Yes, I agree with you, Wendy, that we should avoid the word legitimacy and illegitimacy and pronouns, et cetera. We should just stick to trying to be technical about this.
Cool. Okay. I think Eric is next. Christian has finished, right? I'm just trying to get this straight. If I make that go away. So, Eric, are you next?
I guess so, although I've just been talking for a little bit.
this is a user error. This is not a technology problem.
The use of the handset was suboptimal, so I recommend people who can do Skype rather than an actual handset that goes through a 5-second or so pause of switching from mute to non-mute and back. Apparently that was just an artifact of my handset. That's it.
Oh, okay. So use mute on your phone rather than mute on the conferencing system?
No, use Skype or something like that rather than a cell phone or a landline.
I think the reason we need the landline connection is because the transcription and translation all happens on that landline.
Actually, I'm using Skype here now.
Oh, I see. On your end.
Yes. Yeah. So it avoids the handset delay. When switching from mute to unmute.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, when I've been doing this, I've been muting the actual phone handset rather than trying to do the Star 6 business. So, you know, and I'm using a landline. So, I agree. Okay. Other ideas, thoughts? It's pretty late. I apologize for running a couple of minutes over here. And with that, I think we'll call it a day, and we'll see you in a week. Thanks, gang.
Okay. Bye now.
Right.